Blog Talk Radio.
See what you can do. Hey, good evening and welcome to the one and only The Charlotte Line. We're so glad to have everybody with us. At least if we can get everybody on, I think there in cloud server land, there may be a few problems, but we're going to try to get everybody logged on and everything. It's been kind of a hot but beautiful week down here. Beach with everybody just getting coronavirus. Number spot in America, not the number one hot spot that we want to be in, I'll tell you that. Is Zach with us tonight?
Zach and Brady are here. I guess Blog Talk is having issues tonight. I have Brady conferenced in on my personal phone. Hopefully Brady can hear us.
Testing one.
Brady,
two,
can you hear
one,
us?
Two.
Oh! Oh,
good.
Oh, it works.
Well, you know what? We're not the only show that's having problems in the room. The great wrestling blog showcase with Brady Hicks and Papa Stro the Maestro, they were having a few problems earlier, too. So I don't know. But anyway, glad that everyone's here. From Studio G, there he is, Zach Beechler. What's up, buddy?
I am here. I am ready to talk racing action because we have to talk about the All-Star format before we, before we go anywhere tonight. How does that sound?
Well, let's just go there and then welcome to, welcome to Brady Van Sickle. How are you tonight, Brady? Good?
Well, it's been an eventful day here in Iowa. We got a lot of storms, so I was kind of wondering if maybe my phone difficulties was because we had a tower down, but no, I don't think we got no towers down, but it was definitely storming like a Dickens out there.
That is one thing I do not miss in the Midwest, that is for sure.
I know, and I'll tell you what, that Dorothy, she really didn't like those storms. Her and that dog flying up there in the wind and going to Oz, I mean, she didn't like that. But anyway, as they say, there's no place like home. So speaking about no place like home, there's no place like the Charlotte Line and talking about the All-Star race. All right, get going, guys. Let's find out what's happening.
Well, so we got a bunch of stuff of the All-Star race. The first one is the fact that this is the second time it is not going to be held at the Charlotte Motor Speedway. The first time ever was Atlanta. And it's funny enough, I had been listening to a lot of racing podcasts to kind of get a feel for the All-Star race, and there was so many people wanting it at Bristol a year or two ago, and now we're going to have it. I'm excited for this short track racing, but on a Wednesday night. It's not the first time we've had it so far this year, but I think this one's a little more special.
And, you know, I get why we always had it in Charlotte all those years. It was the perfect place. It's NASCAR's homecoming. Most of the teams are built there. So it's kind of like its own speed weeks where you could spend 2 weeks down there, go to the Charlotte 600 the week after that, maybe spend your Memorial Day there. So I get from, like, an event hosting standpoint, like, it made a lot of sense just logistically. But from a fan perspective, this is the kind of racetrack that the All-Star race has desperately needed, because no offense to Charlotte Motor Speedway, that's not a great venue for an all-out brawl of a race where there's no points, just money and pride. You need that to be at a short track, and what better short track in the NASCAR repertoire than Bristol Motor Speedway, Thunder Valley, the last great Coliseum. The names go on and on because this place is that epic, and we were just there a few weeks ago, and the racing was electric all afternoon long. And we didn't even get a cup race a couple weeks ago. And there's nothing better than seeing those cars under the lights, which, Zach, you kind of dropped the news to me a little bit. I still don't know if I'm fully wrapped my head around it, but speaking of lights, there's going to be a little bit extra glow, per se, on these cars.
Yes, it's something very interesting that they're approaching. So last year, we have to preface this last year. Last year at the championship weekend at Nashville, and this has been happening at a lot of the championship weekends. The cars will go out into the street, they'll have it blocked off, and they'll do burnouts. Well, at the championship this past year, they had LED lights underneath the cars. They were either matching like the color scheme or something to the car. They were glowing as they were doing the burnouts. Well, NASCAR, early last week, right after our show, announced that the teams would have to signify their manufacturer by LED lights. A photo had leaked via Twitter or Instagram that showed, weirdly enough, that Ford would have a blue LED light. Now, it's for certain for those cars that are going to run in the All-Star race. There was still talks, and I think there is still even this late, if the cars that are competing in the Open will have them. But, man, seeing underglow lights, if you're a Fast and the Furious fan, that just takes you back to when Officer Brian was racing his GTR in the very first Fast and Furious movie.
So, honestly, that's immediately where my mind went to with the Fast franchise, because, fun fact, one of the very first things I did during quarantine was binge-watch all of them in one weekend. I don't recommend it. It's not for the faint of heart. But that aside, the thing that really kind of reminded me a lot of that, I was like, man, only we had the underglow during the days of the COT, because that car was straight on like a stock car pipe dream mixed with imports with the wing and the splitter. That car would have looked actually pretty wicked with some underglow on it. But honestly, I see kind of the renders, and I'm kind of hyped about it. It's kind of gimmicky. It's kind of not in the traditional sense. It adds no purpose whatsoever to the stock car value, the racing, or anything. But it's really cool to look at. So from that standpoint, I'm perfectly content with it.
Well, that is something that at NASCAR, you know, they're always wanting to try stuff. And even Dale Jr. talked about this. I've been listening to the Dale Jr. download some very older ones talking about how they want to make the All-Star race something special, something they're not going to always run, and that was something. So the format, another change that actually came about today, surfaced via a video, was they mentioned doing this, is that they are doing the choose your restart line, whether it's the high line or the outside line or the inside line, via the cone. Brady, I don't know if you know anything about the cone choosing thing. It's used a lot in the late models, and I've seen it quite a bit if you need some explanation on it.
So actually, I'm really hoping you know what this is going about, because I've read a little bit of the article trying to understand it, and I have no idea like what this means, like what the parameters are. So if you have some more information, go for it, because I am completely in the dark on this one.
So the cone, so in NASCAR there is a commitment cone that is used for pit road. The cone that is in reference right now is a cone of choosing your starting line. For the very first start of the race, they'll do the normal double file, you know, first through whatever. But when the first caution comes out, before they take the – they will choose via a cone if they want to start on the outside line or the inside lane for the restart. What that means is the line, everyone could choose the outside, and it could be one very long line of cars, or you could be someone that, you know, maybe like Denny Hamlin. If Denny Hamlin is able to run up the high side, he'll be able to know he'll be able to choose the high line, even if he's in the position to start on the low line. It's kind of an interesting thing. A lot of late model races do it. It's not that confusing if you're someone like me who's been to quite a few late model races, but for people you know, who may not go to their asphalt track, or maybe even some sanctioning bodies around the country don't use that the cone, it is one that is going to be interesting. Especially no matter what, we will have, I believe, 3 restarts mandatory, because we're doing this in stages. So it's going to be something where people who are amazing on the high side can choose to start on the high side, and people that are amazing on the low side can choose that. It's something that kind of creates a little more, I don't want to say drama, but a little more of a strategy call for other drivers, like, oh, Denny's been really good on the high side. Oh, if he's choosing the high side, I'm not that good on the low side. What do I do?
I gotcha. And so my biggest question, the thing I can't really riddle out for certain, who does this apply to? Is it like all the inside row starters, like they get the preference of where they start? Or like, that's what confuses me.
It is numerical order. So first, second, third, fourth, as they go. Have you seen the video that circulating around today?
I have not.
So there's a video that actually shows what the because they can't use a physical cone because it's not going to be safe for an official to be able to walk out on the track to get it. So they have painted a yellow line down the center just past the start-finish line with an orange V and an orange box. That signifies where the cone, quote-unquote, would be. So numerical order, first, second, third, just like that, will be single file, and they'll pass the start-finish line, and they have to choose which line they want to start on. Do they want to start on the outside or the inside? They have to make that commitment by the time they get to the cone. Now, NASCAR, in the video that has been posted today for the drivers' meeting, it signified if we feel, NASCAR feels, that you did not make your proper commitment, whether your tires hit the box, you didn't actually fully commit, you're just causing chaos, you will be sent to the tail end of the longest line. So if you have 15 cars that committed to the outside and 5 that committed to the inside, you won't be starting on the inside. Even if you tried to choose that, you'll be starting at the tail end of the long line. So to kind of sum up the answer, everyone gets to choose, but it starts from first place on back.
So the thing that I still can't wrap my head around, let's say first chooses the outside lane and second chooses the outside lane. Are they going to line them up single file or?
Yep. That is how it will be done. So a lot of short track racers like to do that because some tracks you can get a better run on the outside depending on what tracks they are. Now, the two tracks I've been to for a lot of short track racing, Greenville Pickens and Hickory, the outside is hit and miss. But this is something that even if you, let's say you are someone that's in the fourth starting position, the first three cars pick the outside lane and you choose to go on the inside, you will start on the first spot of the inside lane. It is a interesting thing, and it's also a strategic thing, like I said. If you see it's kind of like going down pit road. If you see the first five cars go down the pit road and you feel you have enough tire or fuel to get to the end and you choose to stay out, it's kind of like that. It's going to be very interesting for people like you, Brady, who've never seen this type of restart styles to see for the first time. And when I say it like that, me and Brady and a bunch of other people I grew up watching racing, we remember back in the day, they didn't do this double file restart. In fact, they did a single line, but lapped cars were actually on the inside line. And I remember growing up watching that until they changed it back to the double wide.
Oh, yeah, no, and that was, they changed that in 2009, I believe, because they started actually, coincidentally that we're talking about this, the whole double file restart was first pioneered during the 09 All-Star race. And I can't remember if they enacted that as a permanent change midway in the 09 season or if it was full-time in 2010. But it was a wilding success in the 09 All-Star event. And people were like, why don't we do this normally? And from then on, we dropped the single-file starts with the lap cars on the inside and have been double-file ever since. And it's not been perfect. Like Zach said, I mean, at a lot of tracks sometimes, one group is preferable than the other, which is why this choose cone idea has been proposed to kind of maybe try to eliminate somehow a type disadvantage of the outside over the inside. I got to say, I have to see it in practice. It sounds extremely convoluted to me, having never seen it in practice before, and I'm trying so hard to figure this out, but I'm so stumped at the same time. So I'm excited to learn with the rest of the people and find out more about it because it sounds interesting, and if it improves the racing, I'm here for it. I'm definitely down for anything that improves the product.
So here's a couple things I'll say about that. If you are concerned about whether or not you're going to like it or you're concerned that you don't understand it, the big thing I would say, watch the video NASCAR has posted. It is on Facebook, Twitter, just about everywhere and anywhere. Bob Costas actually has posted on his Twitter, so go check him out. But also look on YouTube. Look up restart, choose your cone restarts, short track, late model stuff. You'll be able to find a lot of videos that actually show, you know, no, they might show some people explaining what it does, but you will see, okay, so the first three cars chose the outside line, then another car and this and that. If you see it in practice, and I will say this, more than likely, whoever will be broadcasting the All-Star Race will have a much better explanation than I will. But I can't wait for this. And someone that's seen this kind of restart style at short track racing with 10,000 to win restarts, oh, man, it's a fantastic thing. I can't wait for it.
Well, I'm definitely excited to see how it goes. I'm so perplexed. Like, I'm trying to make sense of it in my head, and I know it will make sense. I just got to trust the process, but I don't know. Sometimes it's really hard to trust that process.
Well, and one thing, too, to put out there, a lot of drivers were advocating for this, which sorry about that. It seemed had some technical difficulties. Call just all of a sudden dropped. Like I said earlier, Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, well, we're back.
Some issues, but yeah, well, we're back, thankfully.
But we're all here.
But yes. Yeah, so yeah, Brady, I'm excited for Bristol. I think the big thing that we'll take away from this, like I said, was a lot of drivers were saying they wanted this. They wanted to choose the choose your cone type deal, and I'm excited for it because of that. That just shows that there's a lot of drivers who've always shown interest in this, and NASCAR listened in. If it's something kind of like the double file restart, maybe we'll see it in some other events. I would be happy to see it.
Well, we'll definitely see. We're going to find out tomorrow. That's going to take place on the Fox channel, or FS1, I believe, actually, is what they're going to broadcast it. And do we have a start time on that, Zachary?
I believe the open starts at 7. Let me double check, because the times have been kind of changing a little bit because of, I guess, like syndication issues, and also they want to make sure they can get the East Coast in and this and that. The All-Star Race for sure will start at 8:30 p.m. Well, quote unquote, will start at 8:30 p.m. because of depending on how long the Open goes for. But the Open is supposed to start at 7 p.m. on FS1.
Perfect. And also, one thing we have to touch on before we move on from the story, whether it's advised or not, tomorrow night's All-Star event will also be the first one. With a pretty packed number of fans going to be expected in attendance. I think the reports I was seeing was going to be a 30% capacity, so that's like roughly, what?
About 25,000
fans?
Yeah, about 25,000 fans will be allowed, and this will be the biggest event, period. I mean, it doesn't matter who, doesn't matter the event, doesn't matter. It's not F1, IndyCar, around the world. This will be the biggest event that spectators would be able to go to. And there's been a couple of people pop up saying, like, well, how come they can fit so many and this and that? Bristol Motor Speedway actually has a very big seating capacity. As someone that's been there myself, I walked around the track. And I mean, I walked around it because somebody gave me wrong directions where my seat was. I wasn't too happy with him. But there's a lot of seats there, ranging from all the way at ground level, where you are basically right there on the track, all the way up almost 300 feet in the air. There's a lot of seats. So 25,000 people, I know some people might be thinking, well, that seems like it might be a little too much. They definitely have the space to do the, you know, 6 feet for COVID and to have the proper proper precautions as well. And one thing I do want to note is there is a waiver and everything, and there has been people that work there at Bristol who said, you know, the Speedway is taking more than extra precaution. They're not going to be having there are some souvenir stands that are independent from any team owner and stuff. There is a Chase Elliott hauler with souvenirs and a Jimmy Johnson hauler of souvenirs from what someone has posted on the NASCAR Reddit. So it's not going to be a whole bunch of souvenirs, a whole bunch of stuff. Concessions will not be open, but you are able to bring in a cooler with drinks and food. So I'll be excited that we'll be able to hear fans, and a lot of them, And it's just going to, I think it's going to bring back the feeling that even the drivers have missed of racing in front of their fans.
It'll be interesting for sure. I just hope that everyone, you know, follows the protocols, that we don't have any smart asses out there trying to ruin it for everyone, and that everyone social distances, that everyone leaves there safe, you know, that stays healthy. Because I don't want this to become something that backfires back on NASCAR. We've seen a lot of places that have irresponsibly reopened too soon and didn't follow proper distances, have now had a lot of outbreak cases, and it's started to really kind of spiral out of control in some areas. So I just hope that everyone, you know, is smart about it, takes it seriously, so that way, you know, we can maybe have a few more of these races like this where we can have some fans in attendance, because it's going to be great to see people back there and to hear that roar again. But I just want to make sure that I just hope that no one takes it upon themselves and ruins it for everyone kind of deal.
That's for sure. So with that being said, I feel we have everything. And one thing we definitely, and I mean this, we definitely need to talk about is this weekend that just passed, 4 days of racing action. This ain't Daytona. This ain't, you know, Charlotte. This is Kentucky, the bluegrass state, where we had four different races, two Xfinity, one truck, and one Cup Series race, two brand new winners, Pete winner. What are the odds that we even get one first-time winner, let alone two in two different series, and somebody that swept both Xfinity races? I mean, this is just – I was surprised.
Well, especially – and we'll talk about that a little bit later. I won't spoil who it was, but the one statistic that really blew me away about – that came out of Sunday's Kentucky 400 – was the fact that coming into this event, they've been racing the Cup Series at Kentucky now since 2011. And in those races since 2011, a rookie driver has only placed in the top 10 once, and that was Eric Jones back in 2017. And that top 10 by Eric Jones was the only time a rookie had even finished in the top 15 at Kentucky. And I was just sitting there just thinking about that. I'm like, man, I didn't really grasp, like, how hard a track it is to get around there, because I've not seen a whole lot of those races. And, you know, a lot of myself, so I've not really seen just how abrasive and how tough it is and how much the drivers really struggle for grip to get around this 1.5-mile track. And so the fact that it was so tough that up until this weekend, before this weekend, there had only been one top 15 recorded by a rookie driver at Kentucky, like, that really put it into perspective for me, just how tough this track is.
Not just that, there were three rookies who finished in the top 10. So we tripled the average, or we tripled how many had actually been in the top 10 before that. It was nuts. But yeah, let's start off with the first race, the Shady Race 200. And to, I think, a lot of people's surprise, Austin Cindric just kind of came out of the blue, and I don't want to say he dominated the race, but he led a total of 40 laps. And we honestly thought Chase Briscoe, who was up there with him towards the end, was going to win it. And then Cindric's just like, nope, it's my turn. It's my turn. Brad Keselowski Racing in the trucks has told me what to do, and I'm going to accomplish it. And, man, just that last two laps definitely showed that Austin Cindric can wheel.
And honestly, I'm surprised it's taken this long into the season for that 22 bunch to get a win, because he has just been solid. He's not been really, up there challenging for the wins like Noah Gregson and Chase Briscoe have, but he's been in the picture for a lot of those races. And so I was not shocked at all to see the 22 car stealthily work his way into position and steal a win there, because he's just been knocking on that door all season long. And I was just like, man, it's just a matter of time before they don't know what hit him. And the 22 car has got him cornered for a race win there. And he even backed it up. He swept both the city races. The 22 car was just electric, and he was fast when he needed to be. The race, the Shady Race 200, the first one we're talking about here, it was dominated for the first two stages by Noah Gregson. Gregson looked pretty much untouchable in those opening stages, sweeping both stage one and two for the win, and just having a fast Chevy. But he kind of faded there on a couple restarts, and right there to capitalize was Austin Cindric. And this was also a huge moment for Cindric, as his first two wins in the series last year came on a road course. So this would be his first win on a NASCAR oval, and that definitely meant a lot to Penske driver.
Not just that, it definitely showed that he isn't just a road course guy. I mean, I believe he got his first and only Truck Series win at the Canadian Motorsports Park, if I'm remembering correctly.
You are correct.
Wow. Hey, look at that. And also, he did win. Nope, I'm thinking of Chase Briscoe won at Eldora. But even that, I mean, Austin, is someone that you look at him, you think, oh, he's only a road course guy. He's done this, he's done that, a lot of road course and stuff. This kind of puts in perspective that he is a little more than just a road course guy. He has been consistent in the Xfinity Series, you know, getting two wins prior. That's a good accomplishment, period. But getting two wins at two road courses, meh. But now cementing, and I do mean that, cementing two wins at Kentucky within 24 hours of each other's, that just shows what kind of wheeling he can do. By the way, like I said, Noah Gregson was the dominant one. He led 87 laps. I mean, he led double what Austin Cindric led. And that just shows how dominant Noah was for this race and how dominant he's been this season, but just shows how great Austin Cindric can and will be. One thing we do have to point out, too, is that top five is kind of there's a couple people in there we don't see in the top five that often. Riley Herbst in the Monster Energy for Joe Gibbs Racing, right up there. And Michael Annett. It's kind of odd to see Michael up there in the top five for someone that I don't want to say he has bad performance, but he's not as aggressive as the rest of Junior Motorsports. I think shows that Michael might be getting back into it.
I mean, definitely when you're comparing to the likes of, like, Noah Gregson, for sure, and Justin Allgaier, definitely not the most aggressive on that junior motorsports tree. But, no, it was a great run for the Iowa driver. Obviously, I'm a little biased, but it's always great to see that representation from the Hawkeye State do well. But, no, we saw quite a few drivers actually have good runs there that typically you don't see up there challenging to a lot of the wins. You know, looking down the top 10 right now, we've got drivers like Anthony Alfredo. We got himself into a little bit of a dust up there, but another great performance by that young Richard Childress Racing driver coming home in sixth. But two spots right behind him, Kyle Weatherman driving for Mike Harmon, a very, very small team that Zach, you know, is pretty familiar with, got to say. He kind of knows people. A solid eighth-place run for that driver. So, you know, biases aside, it's really great to see a great run for a young driver trying to find his footing. In an eighth place in an underfunded Chevy, that's no scoffing matter. Right behind him, Ryan Sieg, a really needed good run. Ninth, you know, he's kind of had a string of bad races there, so not getting the finishes he feels like he deserves. So it was really great to see him get a solid top 10. And then right behind them, of course, the 0-2, Mr. Wonderboy, who continues to overachieve this season in the Power Motorsports group, Brett Moffitt, another solid top 10 for the Iowa driver there. So that makes two drivers from Iowa in the top 10. So you got to talk about it. You got to represent a little bit.
You do, for sure. And you know, that run, I mean, when you think Kentucky, you don't think of, like, some underdogs really finishing up there. You think, yeah, they'll finish 15th, 12th maybe, but not in the top 10, especially that Kyle Weatherman. You know, Kyle is he's a fantastic driver. He's running kind of everything and anything. If he can get in the ride, he'll drive it for you. And one thing too, I believe it's him or Bailey Curry. He ran that Mike Harmon team. They run the 47 and the 74. One of those drivers, I can't remember who, actually ran 90 laps on one set of tires for one of the races. I believe it was the race on Saturday or on Friday. I'm sorry, but you talk about small people getting success. Anthony Alfredo, definitely one of them, showing he's got talent. Even though he's never ran a full season in anything, he's achieving something that a lot of people have not seen a driver like him do. Kyle Weatherman, using equipment that's older, stuff that's, you know, not up to par really for the finish he had, outperforming it like crazy. Ryan Sieg, again, having a great run. And Brett Moffitt, I mean, just that those four drivers in the top 10, it's amazing to see, you know, those smaller teams really get into it. And I know I can't say, you know, Anthony Alfredo's team is smaller, but just the fact that he doesn't have a full-time ride. He doesn't run full-time anywhere, and he's never ran full-time in anything, and he's still able to achieve this great of a run at a difficult track like Kentucky.
And, you know, you kind of have to feel like that he's probably trying to audition for next year. This year, Richard Childress Racing, they scaled back. They're still running a full-time season in the Xfinity Series, but not for the Drivers' Championship. They're winning that 21 ride amongst Alfredo, Myatt Snyder, and a couple other drivers. And so, you know, you got to be thinking from his perspective, you know, this is a team, a championship-caliber team in the Xfinity Series. They won the title last year with Tyler Reddick, and every time he gets behind the wheel of his 21 car, he's auditioning for a possible maybe full-time ride, maybe next year, 2021. Maybe it has to wait another year, and it has to wait until 2022. Regardless, he's doing exactly what he needs to do to get him that elusive full-time deal where he can truly begin his NASCAR journey by building up experience, building up, you know, time behind the wheel, and building up a repertoire amongst the guys he's racing amongst in the garage. Because while he's getting that a little bit right now, running the full season, going through the full grind with these drivers, there's really nothing that can compare to that. So, but he's doing exactly what he needs to do by putting in the solid finishes and racking up the experience. But he also...
Oh, hey, we're back. Hey, Block Talk Radio.
And I was there waiting on you.
Right now. Okay, so Brady, you went on auditioning. I'm pulling out my hair over here.
It's just a beautiful day in the neighborhood, Zach. You know, you just gotta do, you know. But like I was saying before, Mother Nature or whatever decided to intervene there. Jesus Christ, who knows? Whoever has it out for me and doesn't want to hear my beautiful tone on the Charlotte line. Though we were talking about Anthony Alfredo and how this is really a huge deal for him. Zach brought it up. He's never had a full-time ride in any of the top divisions of NASCAR. And so every time he steps behind the wheel of the 21 car, it's an audition. Drivers are watching. Richard Childress is watching. You know, he had the full-time ride last year that propelled driver Tyler Reddick to the championship. It's one of the best, most seasoned teams you can possibly be a part of in the Xfinity Series garage. So he's definitely expected to run well. But every time he's running, he's trying to put together the case that, hey, I belong in this sport. I've got a future in this sport. I just need a driver or team or someone to take notice and give me that full-time shot. I think he's proven this year that he definitely has those capabilities because week in and week out, he's racking the top fives and top tens at tracks he's never seen in his life before and running it like a veteran. And that's exactly what he needs to do right now is he's trying to make the case that, hey, you know, Richard, if it's all the same to you, I think I'm ready to take on for a championship next year. So maybe hand me the keys of that venerable number two car and let's see what we're working with here.
I definitely feel that. And one thing we do have to note is that there's no real say what Anthony will do next year. There's nothing, you know, and right now it's kind of still odd with the whole COVID stuff. But his hope is to run full-time in something. With how everything is going, there's only two drivers running full-time in that or running that car for the most part. Anthony Alfredo and Matt Snyder, who was running in the 93 this weekend for Ryan Teague Racing. So I feel like this is a great tryout for him, like you said, because it actually proves it. You know, his first race at Auto Club at California, he ran laps that was as fast as Tyler Reddick the year before, if not faster. So I definitely feel he has a lot not to prove at this point, but to show he's still that consistency. The moment he gets that, keeps up with it, and even gets a win underneath his belt, not only will he show to Richard that he's ready, which I think he is, but I think that will show to sponsors, hey, I can run. You know, come on board. Let me show you what I can do.
Oh, that's the other thing right there. Sponsors definitely are a huge factor in this, and the only way you can make your case that you're sponsorable is by running up front so that that way your advertiser can get plenty of bang for his buck and make sure he gets that good old ROI on the investment. So he's doing all the right things, and I just hope it continues to pan out for him because what a great kid, too. I've seen him in a lot of his interviews. He's very humble, very well-spoken.
and definitely the kind of caliber of driver that, that the top division definitely needs and wants. And so I think if he plays his cards right, he's got a bright future ahead of him.
For sure. And, you know, run down the order real quick because we have three more races to still talk about, which is crazy. Austin Cindric, again, winning his first oval track race ever at Kentucky. In the first place, Riley Herbst, Ross Chastain, another solid run for him. Consistency is the key. Chase Briscoe, Michael Annette, the top five, Anthony Alfredo, Justin Haley, Kyle Weatherman, Ryan Sieg, and Brett Moffitt, your top 10. Noah Gregson, Jeremy Clements, Joe Graff Jr., Jesse Little, and Matt Schneider in the 15th position. That's your top 15. Chad Finch, Harrison Burton, BJ McLeod, Ryan Bass Jr., Justin Allgaier, that's your top 20. Timmy Hill, Bailey Curry, Vinny Miller, Alex LeBay, Cody Vandewalle is your top 25. Josh Williams, Brandon Brown, Mason Marcy, Jeffrey Earnhardt, and Matt Millis is your top 30. Garrett Smithley, Colby Howard, Tommy Lee, Jeff Burton, and Stephen Lynch is your top 35. And Brandon Jones, who crashed out on the first lap, getting a 36th finishing dead last. By the way, that is the third race he has finished dead last in. Coming off a high at Pocono, winning the truck race, crashed out there, crashed out here. Not a good sign for him right now.
No, and that's the heartbreak for me right of the weekend was the second week in a row for Brandon Jones. He didn't even do anything wrong this time. He literally had a wreck fall in his lap. It was literally just that quick where Jeff Burton just lost control right in front of him, and just Brandon had nowhere to go and just smacked right into him. And it was just absolutely heartbreaking because that kid – definitely was hoping for a rebound after running into a similar kind of incident at Pocono Raceway where we were at just a week ago. But, you know, that's racing, you know, then the brakes sometimes. That just, it sucks. It's one of them deals, but it's one of them deals. But I've seen the replay a couple times, and there's just not much more you could have done. So hopefully, I mean, it's not going to happen in the Alsco 300, which was the race they ran the very next day for the Xfinity Series Friday night. He made it a lot more laps this time, but it was definitely a weekend to forget it. Also, just like the first race, he got involved with the number 8 car in an accident turn 2 in lap 180. He was the final caution in this race instead of the first caution. But again, Brandon Jones did find himself on the losing end of a wreck, and this race, he finished a few spots better and placed 30th. So definitely not a good weekend for that Joe Gibbs racing driver.
Exactly. But great weekend for Austin Cindric, winning the race this time, and this time in a more dominant fashion. 130 laps, led most out of any driver, and most by a long shot, too. The next driver of the most laps led was Noah Gregson with 37 laps, almost 100 laps difference. It's crazy to see. I think this back-to-back racing helped Austin kind of figure out how the race would run out because it was essentially the exact same conditions. Night, a little bit of warmth to the air, a little bit of warmth to the racing surface, but nothing crazy like we'd seen prior at like Pocono or Daytona. A lot cooler, a little more cooler because it wasn't nighttime, and that dominating fashion for himself. I mean, just barely letting anyone else lead, and if he did, it wasn't for anything more than the longest stint that someone else led was Noah Gregson at 37 laps.
And, I thought it was going to be Noah Gregson, but once again, he just didn't have the cards fall his way, but a hell of a performance by Austin Cindric. Has definitely the statement-making he needed, and a win. Two races at the same track, back-to-back nights. The last time that was done was in the Cup Series by none other than Richard Petty. So anytime you're putting yourself on the same area of speech as the King Richard Petty, you're definitely doing something right. And he's another driver who really doesn't know what his plans are next year. So kind of definitely needed to shore that up and have another good run. And anytime you win, Roger Penske is definitely going to be happy with you. So he's doing what he needs to do. But you mentioned Noah Gregson. He had a pretty decent night there. led the second most laps off Cindric. Looked like he was going to be in position for maybe a win after losing out on leading most laps and not getting the win on Thursday night. But instead, he found himself in the headlights for a bit of different reasons. Had a bit of an altercation with Harrison Burton. The two made contact and eventually led to the cut to a tire cutting down on Harrison Burton was able to continue, but definitely his car was wounded and he fell to 12th, while Noah Gregson was able to rally to 7th. So definitely not what they were looking for. Those two also got into an incident a couple weeks ago at Charlotte where kind of similar deal. Noah Gregson got loose on the bottom. The bottom didn't have a whole lot of grip, and he slid up into the swing. And so it's been kind of building up, and there was definitely a bit of a chip on the shoulder there. So after the race, Harrison Burton approached Noah Gregson in the garage area, and some words were said. Harrison gave a shove to Noah. Noah didn't appreciate that. So he's like, hey, don't shove me. Harrison shoved him again. And that's then Noah out of nowhere, right-hand hook right to Harrison Burton's head. And it was on from there. It was an all-out brawl. Officials were called in. They got them separated. Surprisingly, no fines, no nothing like that. The NASCAR's like, hey, kids will be kids, I guess. But
Seattle Police Department, doesn't it?
It does, and you know, it sounds like kind of some of the stuff that your guys on your wrestling podcast will be talking about. It's straight up Monday Night Raw.
They don't do that kind of thing, buddy. They're a little
more.
No, they're a little classier than that. Yes, they are.
Well, that is true. Noah just, it was something that was heating up between those two, and I think that was the big point that was kind of the boiling point. You know, it kind of took Noah away from potentially getting a win, if not at least a top five finish. And he just showed, like, hey, I ain't going to take this no more. And that, I've watched that fight so many times. It is so – it's that – I think that one and the John West Townley-Spencer Gallagher fight at Gateway are two of my favorite fights now.
Though the John West Townley and the Gateway incident, can you really call that a fight? Like, that was
– Hey, if I'm laughing while I'm watching it, yes. But no, you're right. That was something. I was surprised myself, a few words, that NASCAR didn't hand down some sort of penalty. They talked to them. Obviously, it wasn't in the holler, but it was over the phone. Both drivers must have made up, said, okay, I won't do it again. Okay, I won't do it again either. Fine, okay, fine. And went about their business. But it definitely is something to see. One thing is NASCAR obviously stepping in, talking to them, doing stuff, but also not seeing a fine or anything. When you think back to other people, I just listened to the Dale Jr. Download, Michael Waltrip incident with, I believe it was Chad
Speed.
Little. Yeah.
That was Lake Speed.
Lake Speed, you're right, because it's a spam car. He got fined $10,000. And this the interview that I'm talking about was with Dale Jr. right after the All-Star race or a week after that. Where Clint Bowyer and Ryan Newman, well, Clint Bowyer kept punching Ryan Newman, I should say. So, it was interesting, but I think NASCAR is kind of having that, all right, boys, as long as we don't see, feel like nothing really, no one really got hurt or et cetera, we're not going to do anything, per se. There is possibility that they can still be put on probation, and with this, NASCAR will be keeping a little extra eye on those two for at least the near future, maybe the rest of the season.
Man, I thought a couple of years ago now they said boys have at it now.
Well, no one got hurt, so that's the key thing to take away from that real quick.
This is true. No, it was definitely an interesting altercation. I didn't really see it coming, especially not from those two. I didn't see that being something we have to deal with, but I mean, according to Harrison Burton, this has been a long time coming, and he's claiming that it's going to be a pretty popular move in the garage. I didn't see it that way. I just saw their deal, both their deals, the Charlotte deal and this newest one in Kentucky, is just pure racing deals. But I don't know. Everyone will see an incident differently. That's the one thing you're going to have to take away from this.
Well, we can also say for certain that the former teammates from Kyle Busch Motorsports, not seeing eye to eye. Then again, they're not on the same team anymore, so they don't have to.
This is also true. They have to run their own race. And, you know, and that's another thing we have to talk about is that we haven't really talked about, but that was a major storyline this whole weekend, and this event was just a product of it, was the grip of the track itself. NASCAR laid down that infamous PJ1 right down the middle of the groove, which I thought was kind of an odd placement on both corners. More towards the middle of the lane, up to the top lane, kind of leaving that bottom lane untouched. They added, after the Xfinity race, because so many drivers were struggling for grip and losing grip on the bottom lane, they added a small strip on both corners to the lower groove to try and help that problem. But it was a prevalent issue throughout all four races where drivers just were struggling to keep grip on the bottom lane, and they would accidentally, you know, lose control and get up into another driver. And and through no fault of their own, it was just a complete racing deal. They make contact in the Noah Gregson incident. It ended up making significant contact. There was also a couple incidents like Ross Chastain. He got up into Brett Moffitt during this race, the Alco 300, and made some pretty significant contact. And we saw it heavily throughout the truck race and in the cup race. Just no grip there on the bottom.
I think one big thing for that is the fact that we haven't had practice sessions. And also, need to put this out there too, there was rain in the area later on that Thursday or that Friday night after the Xfinity race. So it kind of washed away any rubber that had been played. So, as I was saying, Kentucky kind of got some rain before the truck race on Saturday, kind of washed away all that grip. But, you know, one big thing that's kind of hindering traction at some of these tracks, if not a lot of them, is the lack of practice we are not getting. Because of the fact that we would run down, you know, NASCAR themselves, the trucks, Xfinity, Cup, whoever's running, even the ARCA series, even though it's a different tire company and compound, getting any type of rubber down on that track helps get any traction. And with no one really practicing, no one really putting rubber down on the bottom, you kind of just get that loose grip no matter what. Now, one thing with practice, even though, you know, it is a green surface when they get to the track, by the time they get through first practice, you know, 40-some cars in the Cup Series, 40-some cars in the Xfinity Series, you could definitely feel there'd be more grip down there on the bottom. So I think for this one, it was a little more odd to see that they weren't getting the grip right away. They were getting it a little later, well, a lot later on in the racing for the trucks, Xfinity, and Cup, but it definitely was odd not seeing it. It felt like the rubber wasn't really staying down on the pavement.
Yeah, no, definitely the grip was at a premium, and it seemed like if you weren't in the preferred groove, you were going to be struggling. But even still, we saw some drivers taking some really ballsy moves in a lot of corners where they were trying to dive bomb and just hoping to God it would stick. And surprisingly, a lot of those instances, it stuck, and they were fine. But, yeah, no, Kentucky has always been a track that I feel like been really difficult to get a handle on, and this weekend was just more proper evidence of that. It was definitely a track position game, and if you didn't have the track position, you were going to be in for a long evening or afternoon, depending on when your race was.
That is for sure. So, again, Austin Cindric winning that. The run down that again one more time. Austin Cindric, Chase Briscoe, Justin Haley, Ross Chastain, and Justin Allgaier, who was admitted to the hospital the night before because of it wasn't after the race, his heartbeat stayed really elevated, so they took him to the hospital. He got discharged, was sent back to the motor coach, and was cleared by NASCAR to race that day. So great to see that not only was he fine, but he was able to rebound after a very, very scary last lap crash that sent him to the hospital. Anthony Alfredo, again, getting an outstanding run, sixth place position. Noah Gregson in seventh, Michael Annett eighth, Daniel Hemric in the ninth spot, and Riley Herbst in the top 10. Jeremy Clements, Harrison Burton, Brandon Brown, Jesse Little, Josh Williams, all top 15. Garrett Smithley, Brett Moffitt, Jeffrey Earnhardt, Matt Millis, and BJ McLeod in the top 20. Colby Howard, Joe Graff Jr., Mason Massey, Alex LeBay, and Bailey Curry, your top 25. Timmy Hill, Tommy Joe Martin, Vinny Miller, Cody Vandewall, and Brandon Jones in the top 30. Matt Schneider, Ronnie Bassett Jr., Chad Fincham, Stephen Lynch, and Ryan Sieg, who did not get the run he had, unfortunately suffering suspension issues, in the 35th position. And Kyle Weatherman getting his best finish ever in a Xfinity car, finishes dead last, having an issue on the opening lap going straight to the garage.
It was a good race, but I think that brings us up to our Truck Series event, which was a bit of an interesting one.
Just a little bit. So this was something, too, we need to mention. It did not get halfway. This is the first time we've seen this. It was a 150-lap race, but NASCAR stated that these races at the end of Stage 2 or the halfway mark, whichever came first, would be the end of the race if it got called, and we got that finally. It, kind of odd, Sheldon Creed, who led 20 laps, so pretty decent for himself, got his first ever win in the Truck Series by a rain-shortened race, won the second stage, and won the race overall, getting him quite a bit of points.
Oh, yeah, no, it was a hell of a fight on that restart. He took him 3 wide, which another thing we had, I saw a lot of the Kentucky that I was not expecting to see a lot of the Kentucky, but there was a lot of three wide passes. Like, drivers were finding grip that I did not know that they could find to go 3 wide, and definitely they were braver than I would be. But, no, it was a great racing action. He snookered Ben Rhodes there on the start, which Ben Rhodes, man, my heart kind of broke for him because it seems like every time, especially Kentucky, he's in position for a win. He's got something or someone who gets by him, and it's just not meant to be. But one of these days he might get that win that's been eluding him since he got his inaugural win a couple years ago. He went winless last year, surprisingly. So you hate to see it for him, but what a whale of a job there for Sheldon Creed. He's been solid in his first season and a half for GMS Racing. He's got a lot of pressure on his shoulders because GMS is some top grade A equipment. So this win was a long time coming. He's shown a lot of promise, and what a weight off his shoulders to finally get that monkey off his back, as it were.
For sure. And a lot of people think that, you know, oh, well, it's a rain out, blah, blah, blah. Hey, he still got a win no matter what. Chris Buescher got his first and only win because of weather. All right, we need to, you know, give him respect for that. And he led laps too. So more than just the 2 laps he needed to finish, he actually led 20 some laps to get his first win and to clinch a spot for the playoff system this year, which I think he'll be excited for. If you don't know, Sheldon's actually a driver of many different fields. He ran in the Trans Am Series, he's ran some Xfinity, and now running full time in the trucks. It's fun to see him hop around to stuff and to see him progress and get better and better and better. Even though it's not immense jumps, it's not like, oh yeah, he went from last place finish last week to a win this week. No, he's steadily been getting better and better and better, and just the equipment he's in is some great A equipment to do that in.
Oh yeah, no, for sure. And what a good win too for a popular young driver. I mean, no, I don't think I've ever heard really anyone have anything bad to say about him. He's got a great, you know, history in racing. I'm pretty sure, didn't he spend some time in the Stadium Super Trucks, Robbie Gordon?
Yes. Sport? Yes.
Yeah. So he's a champion there, or race winner there. I guess I don't know how that actually works out for the Robbie Gordon land, but so an interesting background. He's been close on so many occasions, so it was great to see him take that win. And we saw a lot of drivers, just like in the Xfinity races, struggling for grip. None of the big names really got into many major incidents, but a lot of the drivers that kind of hang out in the back of the pack, Tim Beams, Jennifer Jo Cobb, Cody Horvath, some other drivers, they, you know, tested that grip and they lost it. The grip wasn't there, and unfortunately, we saw several of those drivers in teams that definitely did not need that kind of a hit. They run with smaller budgets, and they don't need to take tearing up truck. Unfortunately, find the ass end of the wall on a few of those wrecks, but it was a tricky race, and we saw some great racing action because of it, which is unfortunate sometimes that that's what has to happen when
you got such a lack of grip there on the track.
And a little bit of not a lot of different race leaders. We had Brett Moffitt, who led, Zane Smith, Parker Kligerman, Matt Crafton, Ben Rhodes, and Sheldon Creed. Kind of guys that are all, you know, not – I guess the best way to put it is we didn't have as much diversity. You know, Brett Moffitt, no surprise, he started right on the pole and led quite a few laps, leading 26 laps. Matt Crafton getting a lap led. Parker Kligerman only two. So it's kind of weird to see not a lot of leaders for this, but also not a lot of lead changes either. I know we got a rain-shortened race, but it just it looks odd on paper for how good of a race it was to only have about, what, 9 lead changes?
Oh, yeah, no, I really was surprised by that. Like, I really thought there'd be a lot more lead changes, but it was a relatively, you know, very light on that, surprisingly, because we didn't have a whole lot of lead changes to report.
But, I mean, it was still a great race overall. I love the trucks. At the Bluegrass State, you can't go wrong with watching the truck series because it's one of the few series that's been running there ever since that Kentucky Speedway was built. On average, 35% laps under caution, quite a bit of stuff from the first one being right off the bat, fluid on the track, not too sure where that came from. The NASCAR hasn't said anything. To the number 9 truck, number 9, the 49, the 33, spinning, having accidents, and then the 7 and the 10 having a major accident. And the last one coming at the end of stage 2, that also ended the race because of how bad the rain was, because Mother Nature doesn't like to give us a break at all.
Oh, no, Mother Nature has been damn well determined not to see us getting any racing this year, which is another shame to know that she's not a sports fan, but... Yeah, no, it'd be like that sometimes. People don't think it'd be, but it do.
But overall, I still like this racing action, and we had, you know, just in the top 5 itself, it's a little bit of a diverse group in the sense that we have all 3 manufacturers in the top 10, or top 5, I should say, and 3 of them come from the same team, Thor Motorsports. Not surprising, though.
Oh, yeah, no, and speaking of teams that were doing well, I was really, you know, pleasantly surprised, but definitely happy to see that the GMS Cup trucks were definitely performing well, because I feel like that team has definitely not shown the speed that we're accustomed to seeing out of them, kind of like Kyle Busch Motorsports has kind of been down on what we're used to seeing out of them, but it was definitely a good run. They had the front row with Zane Smith and with Brett Moffitt, and they were able to hold on for definitely some good runs there.
For sure. But Thor Motorsports getting 3 of the top 5, great to see for them. And it's not just 2 veterans. Matt Crafton, who's been running the series for a very long time, as well as Johnny Sauter. Ben Rhodes, who, like you said, was up there running. We really wish he would have gotten that win. Because I believe his home state is Kentucky, is it not?
It is. You are correct on that.
Look at that random fact, man, right over here. Kind of sad to see he did not get a win at his home track, but getting 2nd is not the same. But overall, I mean, it was such a great racing action. We saw some improvements from drivers like Chris Neckin, 6th place finish. Kyle Busch Motorsports has to be proud of that for him, because he's never raced at this track. I mean, both him and who's the other? My brain just stopped working. Holy crap!
Rafael Azard.
Yes. The Canadian who ran a part-time schedule last year, he didn't run Kentucky. He finished 13th, which is still outstanding for 2 drivers who's never really ran too many ovals, but also never ran an interesting track like Kentucky.
Oh, yeah, no, and especially like we've talked about, for a track that's been really historically pretty tough on rookies, this was definitely a good run by those guys.
Well, overall, a great race, and to run down the whole 40 field, Sheldon Creed, Ben Rhodes, Matt Crafton, Johnny Sauter, and Austin Hill, top 5. Chris Nexus, Zane Smith, Derek Cross, a great run for that young rookie. Again, first time for him even being at that track. Tanner Gray, again, great run for him. Interesting thing still about him, he went from pro stock dragsters to this. I'm still surprised by that. And Todd Gilliland all in the top 10. Brett Moffitt, Grant Infinger, Rafael Lazard, Spencer Davis, which is a great run for him, and Stuart Friesen in the top 15. Tyler Ankrum, Brendan Poole, Brady's guy, Parker Kligerman, Ty Majeski, Austin Wayne Self, all in the top 20. Tate Fogelman, Chandler Smith, Corey Roper, Jordan Anderson, Angela Rutt, finished in the top 25. Clay Greenfield, Ryan Truex, Dawson Cran, Natalie Decker, and Tyler Hill, Timmy Hill's younger brother, finishing in the top 30. Chase Perdue, Ray Seneca, Brian Hill, Corbin Forrester, Tim Views, all in the top 35. Trey Hitchman, Jennifer Jo Cobb, Spencer Boyd, Cody Rutherford, and Norm Benny, all in the 40th top 40. Oof. Those are, you don't want to be in the top 40, especially being crashed out.
No, that means you've definitely had a not-so-fun day right there. But no, it was a pretty good truck race, but I think it's time we talk about the main event, the Cup Series, because what a whale of an event it was. What do we even call this one? It's something 400. It was
Quaker State 400 presented by Walmart.
Oh, what a mouthful of these sponsors getting any more days. But, yes, it was that race, the Walmart-sponsored Quaker State race of ponies. And what a race it was. We had several great side-by-side racing action, a late race overtime restart that came down to a four-wide bout for the win, several minor incidents. We had maybe a little threat of rain that thankfully never came to fruition, and a first-time winner. I mean, you talk about having it all. This race, Zach, had it all.
Not even a full-time or a first-time winner, but also a first-time winner who's a rookie.
We're here.
All right, technical difficulties again. Blog talk. But yes, so this race, one hell of a race, because of that overtime finish. Not just that, getting a first time winner who's also a rookie. The first time we've seen this since Chris Buescher at Pocono for Furniture Row, and also needless to say, like this, he joins a club of some fantastic drivers who won in the rookie season. Do you know any two drivers that have won in the rookie season?
I know several. I know Matt Kenseth and Dale Jr. were two drivers that were in their rookie campaign in 2000. Tony Stewart did it in 1999. Denny Hamlin was a winner in 06. Kyle Busch in 05. Who else was there? Oh, Juan Pablo Montoya in 07. Joey Logano in 2009.
How can you forget Mr. Seven-Time winning in his rookie year on his
Evan Ryan Newman. I guess it's about the 02 class, and Kevin Harvick in 01. So I did forget my early 2000s. I kind of skipped right over them and went straight to 05. But, yes, Ryan the Rocket Man Newman and Mr. Seven-Time himself, who was back in the race car, I guess, semi-COVID clear, I guess. I don't know how that works, but he's back. From his quarantine hiatus, the 48 driver was in Sunday's race and was looking like he was going to be in contention for the win when he got taken out off the bumper of the Kurt Busch machine. And oh my goodness, it was a heartbreak. But not Kurt Busch.
Brad Keselowski.
I don't know why. I've been getting those two mixed up in my head all week, even though they're not similar whatsoever. But we'll get to Jimmy Johnson's woes here in just a minute, but we can't overstate it how much of an impressive feat it was, especially Cole Custer compared to Tyler Reddick and even Christopher Bell's time has not seemed super flashy. And a lot of the races he's even been behind John Hunter Nemechek, who has been week in and week out outperforming in that front row motorsports equipment. And this was definitely a race that he needed. He won the Xfinity race last year, so we knew Kentucky was a good track for him. And the smile on his face and just the appreciation to the Stuart Haas Racing team and his crew and the car that they brought, it was such a great moment for that driver and that team, a team that desperately needed that momentum. And they're in the playoffs, baby. Like, they are going to be a rookie team competing for the championship, which has not happened since 2016 when both Chris Buescher, who got his win, and then Chase Elliott, who pointed his way in, made the 2016 playoffs. So it's been a long time coming since we've seen a rookie driver with this much panache.
Not just that. I mean, he's a rookie driver who's won at that track, like you said, but he joins another elite club of drivers that have won in all three series, and there's not a whole lot of them. But in his group, Tyler Reddick is one of them. Also, Chase Elliott has done that. Kyle Busch, obviously. Kevin Harvick, Kurt Busch, Ryan Blaney. There's a lot of great drivers who have won at all three series now, and him being one of them is impressive. But just the fact that and it wasn't a range-shortened race, so this was actually pure talent. And I know I just said, oh, it still counts. It still does, you know, like I was saying in Sheldon Creed's race. But this is incredible. The drivers he had to, not the drivers he could have, the drivers he had to pass for a win. Kevin Harvick, who's looking for his first victory at Kentucky. Martin Truex Jr., who was going for three in a row.
Not three in a row, just three overall.
Or three overall, I'm sorry, you're right. Brad Keselowski, I mean, drivers that have won there or have been trying hard or on a run, it just was amazing. And the run he had to make him go, honestly, he got a little rub on the restart, and I thought, oh, there's no way he's going to be able to get it. And then the moment he goes four wide with Martin Truex Jr., Kevin Harvick, who was those? Ryan Blaney, who went to the very bottom, went onto the apron, got some air, you know, Bo duped himself into the air, and just somehow managed to keep that car not just on all four wheels, but going forward. Holy crap! You talk about, if you tell someone they need to watch something to get them into NASCAR, tell them to watch the final restart of this race, because that was a roller coaster of emotion.
Oh, it was, and you talked about right there that Ryan Blaney, he just dukes of hazard himself right into the quarter panel of Kevin Harvick's number four machine and took Kevin Harvick out of the possibility of winning two races in a row. But, what an event. It was really special. We saw a lot of great racing. I know Kentucky's gotten a lot of heat in the last 2 years for not being an entertaining track. But between 2019 finish, we saw an electrifying duel between the Busch brothers and then this amazing four-wide bout. I got to say, I'm kind of warming up to Kentucky. It's a unique mile-and-a-half track. The shape is not your typical mile-and-a-half quad oval shape. It's a legitimate D, kind of shaped like the Iowa Speedway is. And I don't know if they were just pulling my leg, but the broadcasters are saying that Darrell Waltrip, who had a hand in designing the track, was heavily influential on the track design, making it a D-shaped oval and then forming the garage area in a way so that from the air it looks like it's spelled a W. And now one scene cannot be unseen. It's now the DW Raceway, and there's just no way you can tell me anything different. But, it was a very, very, very special race there. And to Cole Custer, you know, there was a lot of questions last year, a lot of controversy with the ride and Daniel Suarez getting the oust after only a year behind the wheel. And he wondered, you know, would Cole Custer fare much better? How is he going to do? And then the race just not going his way. I thought we were going to get disconnected there for a second.
Me too.
And then a lot of these races, he was definitely struggling behind the eight ball. So for it to all come together for him and him get this win at one of the toughest tracks on the circuit, that's got to make him feel good. And now that puts the pressure on Christopher Bell and his other rival, Tyler Reddick, who also in their right had very solid days as well. Like we said at the top of this racing recap, this is a track that has eaten rookies alive. And we had three rookie drivers in the top 10. Christopher Bell, 7th, Tyler Reddick in 10th, and then Cole Custer getting the win. So the fact remains, we've said it a lot on the show this season, but we cannot keep beating this horse to death. This rookie class is unlike any rookie class we've seen in a good, good long while. I'm thinking this is probably the most stacked rookie class we've had since the early 2000s when we had, you know, Ryan Newman, Jimmy Johnson winning races left and right, or even 2000 even with Dale Earnhardt Jr. and Matt Kenseth both getting victories. I fully expect this won't be the last rookie winner we have this year. I really expect one of those other two drivers to maybe nab one, maybe before playoffs, but maybe into the playoffs. That remains to be seen. But what a class of rookies. We need this. The sport needs this because the rookies have definitely struggled these last few years.
Oh, that's for sure. And one thing, too, that has to be said about Cole Custer is he actually has been improving that 41 team, because that was something that a lot of people were scared of. Like you said, Daniel Suarez, he performed okay in the 41 camp. Now, a couple years prior, you had Kurt Busch in that 41 car, who won a Daytona 500, who won races, you know, had been in the championship legitimately. Daniel Suarez, not so much. Did he get some better runs later on in the season? Yes. Do I think he, you know, so far up to par right now? I think Cole Custer is outperforming Daniel Suarez for many reasons. One, he tries to keep the car in one piece as much as he can while still being competitive, which is a big thing in racing. But also, he got a top five last week. We can't forget that. And he's been improving his stats slowly. You know, John Hunter Nemechek, he's a young kid that needs to prove that he wants a better ride. And I learned a fun fact is he actually called Kurt Busch when the whole ride for the 42 where Matt Kenseth is right now. He called Kurt Busch and said, hey, can you put my hat in the ring? Because I want to prove what I got. And, you know, I know Bob Jenkins himself would have been like, you know what, I can't blame you for wanting to do that, because he's run Chip Ganassi equipment in the Xfinity Series. So this class, you're right, is crazy nonetheless, but we can't give Cole Custer enough credit. He's outperforming the 41 that it was last at this point.
I mean, I don't know if he's been outperforming quite yet. Definitely the improvement is there, but this is only his second top 10 of the second or third top 10 of the season to go along with that fifth place, the top five he had last week in Indianapolis. So I would hesitate to say that the statistics overall are better than what Suarez's campaign was at this point last year, but definitely having a win, whereas Suarez was not able to do that last year, has definitely elevated his position with that team. And, you know, now we don't have to worry about his situation. I was kind of wondering if maybe we'd have to worry about him being on the hot seat with a driver like Chase Briscoe waiting in the wings, but winning solves a lot of those issues, and definitely that's got him breathing a little easier. And now he can focus on competing for a championship, and it'll be interesting to see what that team can do, if they can actually maybe pull a championship out of their hat. Maybe we'll see the impossible, the unthinkable, rookie champion. It's kind of unlikely, but, you know, I've seen crazier things in the sport.
That's very true. So real quick, I'm just pulling up the stats for Cole Custer and Daniel Suarez, comparing the years. And in all honesty, the first couple races, they were about even. Daniel Suarez got the top 10 or top 5 at Texas, 3 top 10s. But after that, it just kind of fizzled out to being there. I mean, and at this point, I think Cole is doing a lot better than most people think. Even myself, I didn't think he'd be getting this well. I think he's definitely now stepping up, and I think this is going to be a big confidence booster for himself. He's not having to worry about I don't want to say contracts for Stuart Haas for that, but you know what? He's gotten his first win out of the way. He can focus on number 2 and show that he has a drive to get it. But also now he has to, like you said, contend for a championship. Not many rookies get to say, oh, yeah, I'm contending for a championship. And with the format the way it is and how consistent he was also in the Xfinity Series, I feel like he has a very strong – I'm not going to say he is going to win, because that's something that is it's not impossible by any means. That is not impossible. But the fact that last year he was second in points in the Xfinity Series, and he has 2 back-to-back second-place finishes in points, and all the races, if they still stay the same, he has performed well enough that he could definitely get his way into the Final 4.
It could happen, especially if the team communication continues to get better, he continues to gel with his crew chief, gets to figure out these cup cars a lot better, because the experience level amongst these rookies –
was very, very minimal coming into the season. Not many of them had a lot of actual on-track seat time with these Cup cars. And the fact that they're all doing this well with such minimal experience, when you think of drivers like Austin Dillon, Chase Elliott, and some other drivers that come up through the pipeline that has a few more starts under their belt in a Cup car before making a jump, really, really puts in perspective just how talented these guys are, really how impressive it is that they've been running so well.
Oh, that is for sure. And a big thing, too, to kind of put out there for Cole Custer is the fact that he's gotten his first win, Gesundheit, at some pretty difficult tracks. First win in Cup at Kentucky, first win in Xfinity at Homestead, first win in the Truck Series at New Hampshire. Kind of three different types, and he's performing well, so I'll be excited to see what he has for the rest of the season. But still, we can't, you know, just talk about him. Matt DiBenedetto and the Wood Brothers Ford. I know what you were thinking. Oh, he's going to go with Martin Truex Jr. Nope. Matt DiBenedetto getting a third-place finish at Kentucky in the Wood Brothers Ford. That is a great run for Matt. So close. Honestly, if there was a couple more laps, I think Matt would have caught up to Cole because he was really quick.
And that's the other thing is Matt DiBenedetto really helped Cole Custer do something that the broadcasters and myself thought was going to be the impossible. They were coming down to an overtime finish, and Cole Custer was starting in the outside of row three, so he was restarting six. DiBenedetto right behind him outside row four and eight. Many people thought that the winner was going to come from the first two rows just because that's what we've come to expect from restarts at Kentucky, that you can't come from behind the first two rows and get to the win. But DiBenedetto, he laid it on the back bumper of that 41 car and gave him such a shove in that for opening couple corners in the backstretch that held him straight to the outside of the three drivers up in front of him. Coming off of turn four, it looked like it was going to be a fight between Ryan Blaney, Martin Truex, and even Kevin Harvick. They were three wide, really fighting for a lot of no space that was there. And then out of nowhere, with the momentum from the course by the 21, comes Cole Custer just sailing across the outside. And honestly, it was kind of fitting that he pulled such a great outside path,
We're still here.
I don't know what you expect me at this point. I mean, I was on a great tangent there, and I don't even know where you cut me off. So the magic's gone. I think I'm going home, guys. I'm done. I'm going home.
Hold on. I got you. Ready?
Oh, I'm still here. I'm just busting your chops.
Okay. I'll sum up what you were saying. You know, Matt DiBenedetto not only, you know, came from eighth place to third, but he gave the big push that gave – Cole Custer to shove that he needed to get that first win. And you're completely right. I mean, Matt DiBenedetto, he's still starving to get his first win, but he kind of helped out a fellow competitor to get that run. And, you know, Matt wasn't just going to push him and then fall back in. He kept pushing and pushing and past people like Kevin Harvick, like Ryan Blaney, you know, his technical teammates. And that just showed that Matt is not just one hell of a driver as a person to other drivers, but just one hell of a driver, period. Matt himself is performing well above, and even though he doesn't have a win, he's performing well above people kind of expect. You know, the Wood Brothers 21 car is a historical car, has 99 wins, but has given us champions and winners in the sport that no one – I don't want to say wouldn't have thought of, but just some people that give us iconic finishes, like Trevor Bayne in the Daytona 500 in 2011, and Ryan Blaney getting his first win with them at Pocono with his best friend Bubba racing the 43, another iconic race number. You know, Matt himself is proving himself, and he actually, I think, got a lot more credibility by not just other drivers, but by other fans who may not like him or may not know who he is in the sense of I've seen him before, but by pushing a not even a teammate, just a manufacturing mate to his first win definitely gives him a lot more credibility in some people's eyes.
Exactly. Now, and the other thing I was saying in my tangent is the push that Matt Benedetto gave Cole Custer was what the momentum that the 41 car needed to sail it off in the outside lane and make it stick, having a great run off of turn four. And it was so fitting that the driver named after famous movie star, fictional driver, Cole Custer was able to use the daring move to the outside lane with a set of matched tires that held perfectly with the grip. So he even made a little joke about that in victory lane. So I thought that was kind of an unexpected but fitting way for that first win for him to go.
Well, not just that. I don't know if you've seen, he actually posted on social media. It's a clip from Days of Thunder where it says, you're going to go on the outside or something. And it cuts to him going on the outside, being four wide with all those other guys. And it's a funny, but it's a touching clip at the same time because it has, that kind of callback to it. It was fantastic. If you haven't seen it, go to Cole Custer's Twitter or Facebook, Instagram. He has it posted there, and I've watched it probably four or five times just because it's well worth watching it. But it's one thing we need to say too. Ford kind of swept the weekend. Yes, they didn't get the truck race, but they were. It's weird to see Ford being so dominant across the board. I mean, just in the top five here, we have three Fords. In the truck race, we had three Fords. In the Xfinity, we had, we don't have as many Fords, but both the Fords that were running in the Xfinity were in the top five for both races.
Oh, yeah, and it was so close, too. Ben Rhodes was in perfect prime position to make it a clean sweep of the weekend for the Ford ponies there, but was not meant to be. But it would have been a neat storyline to see that all happen and come together, but no, and it was a great mix of manufacturers, too. I thought that at times the Chevys were looking good in all series. At times the Toyotas were holding a lot of poise. Martin Truex Jr., he showed a lot of speed that I hadn't seen out of that 19 very often so far in 2019, just flat-out, raw-out speed as he came from tail-end Charlie, starting shotgun on the field all the way up to be contending for that win. So not sure if the ship is righted over there at TRD, but definitely it was a much-needed performance for that fledgling manufacturer.
Well, one interesting thing that me and you – I kind of talked to you about this over Messenger, and we'll go through the finishing order after this. I think Kyle Busch now is in not panic mode, but the mode he was in 2012 when he won his first championship. 15, you're right, I'm sorry. He had broken his legs early on in the year, recovered to the point where he could race, was not winning races just yet, but got to about this time of year where he finally won. He won the Brickyard, which didn't cement him into the points just yet. He still had to get in the top 30, I believe, at the time to get to be able to run for the championship. Now he has that drive, I feel, that's going to make him really want to push even harder to get that. He still is in the top 16 for points, but that still right now isn't guaranteed to get him in. So I want to get your vocal opinion because I read what you said, but I want to make sure, not that I understand, but people kind of understand maybe my thought process behind this.
See, I kind of got your sense of urgency, kind of line of thinking where you really think that the urgency is going to help get that ship righted. But to me, it's not really that he's had any bad luck or, races that have got away from him where he's shown speed, kind of like in 2015 where it was just a victim of circumstance that put him behind the eight ball. To me, this season reminds me a lot of 2012 where the whole 18 team was uncharacteristically off, and they just didn't have the speed we were used to seeing by that point. And that year in 2012, they only had one win on the entire campaign and just really were a non-factor for most of the year in concern to the championship. And that's kind of the Kyle Busch team we're seeing this year where, he's maybe gotten a few good finishes here and there, and I'm fully expecting to get a win before too long. But I don't see the raw out speed that took him to a championship last year or even to the championship in 2015 when he came back from his injury. And I think that it's maybe not just the 18 team that's down. I think the entire Toyota camp is just a little bit behind on speed compared to the other two manufacturers. And I think it's maybe just more of an overall Toyota problem. But I think, like, of the Toyotas, Kyle Busch is definitely one of the weaker ones, because Martin Truex and Denny Hamlin seem to be still doing quite fine and racking up the finishes that they need. But I don't know. I think this number 18 team is going to need to do a reset after this year. I don't see championships personally. I see it more of a frustration aching to 2012 for me.
I definitely understand that. So run down the finishing order before we end tonight. Colt Custer, again, young rookie, getting his first win, first place finish. Martin Truex Jr., Matt Benedetto, Kevin Harvick, and Kurt Busch, who won the race last year, getting in the top five. Ryan Blaney, Christopher Bell, the second rookie, finishing seventh. Eric Almirola, Brad Keselowski, and Tyler Reddick is your top 10. William Byron getting a great run for himself. Denny Hamlin, Austin Dillon, Clint Bowyer, and Joey Logano finishing 15th position. Ty Dillon, Ryan Newman, Jimmy Johnson, who was up there, could have gotten the win, but got spun out by Brad Keselowski. Alex Bowman and Chris Buescher is your top 20. Kyle Busch, who spun, made contact with the wall, who kind of ended his day, kind of. Eric Jones, Chase Elliott, Michael McDowell, who was up there for a long time. Matt Kenseth, your top 25. Daniel Suarez, Bubba Wallace, Corey LaJoie, Ricky Stenhouse Jr., and J.J. Yaley, your top 30. Brandon Poole, Josh Bilicki, Garrett Smithley, Joey Gase, Gwynn Hoff, 35th on, and John Homer Niemicek, Timmy Hill, and Ryan Preece, your last two places. By the way, Brady, I know you're going to like this. Have you seen Brandon Poole's paint scheme for the Open this week?
I have, Zach. I do not like this new paint scheme design. I have seen every driver's paint scheme with this new door number towards the back wheel, bigger emphasis on the sponsors, and I am not a fan. None of the cars look great to me. I do not like it. I really try to not be a boomer about it, try to be a little more open-minded about it, not be like, oh, it's not my NASCAR, but aesthetically, it doesn't do it for me. I think they all look fucking hideous. I will be that vocal about it. Damn it.
Damn it, Bobby. Well, here's a good thing that gives us a little bit of a lead up for next week. But I will say this, I'm hit and miss on some. I want to see them on the track. So from Greenville to Des Moines to Myrtle Beach, it's been a hectic night, unfortunately. And luckily,
we're
it's
here.
Over. We can
we're
go to bed.
Here.
Well, we're still here now, but with 20 seconds to go. It definitely has been a hectic night. It is over. We get to reset and enjoy an amazing all-star race at Bristol this weekend. I am not going to be wearing pants tomorrow, I'll tell you that.
Oh, God. My
see you guys.
Bye, guys.
Have a good one.
Maybe. Is she? Where is she?
She might be busted because everything else has been busted.
She might be back. She might be.